Welcome to the WRSU Crew, the revolutionary show to hear all things sports, from your very own Rutgers athletics to the hot topics in all professional and collegiate sports from around the globe, coming to you from your own Rutgers students. Sit back, relax, and enjoy your ride with the crew.
And welcome back. This is a fresh week here of the WRSU Crew, the Monday edition. Maybe some of your favorite editions. You know, I don't speak for the audience, but it's one of my favorite editions. I'm Dylan McCoy, joined by Gideon Fox and Christian Vasquez. And guys, unfortunately, as is most weeks, unfortunately, we have to start with Rutgers football. And I don't know how to quantify that performance in words, but it was you know, you don't expect a team like Wisconsin to throw for 300 yards. You don't expect a guy like Graham Mertz to look like a Heisman Trophy candidate, you know, passing through the air. But that's what happened. Overall, you know, collapse of the team. And then even past that, Aaron Cruickshank now out for the season, which is absolutely just devastating. A Chris Ash level Rutgers game. This is something I would have expected 2 or 3 years ago. It was a step back for sure.
Yeah, I mean, especially the way things look good during the first quarter. I think Rutgers should have gone. They should have gone for seven instead of, or gone for six instead of going for that field goal in the first quarter. But besides that, I mean, things were going well. What was the score at the end of the first quarter? It was like 7-3 or 10-3. Like, that was very manageable, especially against a team against Wisconsin.
7-3.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally manageable. You drive downfield, you know, get a touchdown, it puts you in the lead, hit a field goal, you're down by one. I mean, that's really not the end of the world. So, everything just let loose after that. And now, I mean, you talk about Aaron Cruickshank's injury, Fadukasi got hurt, Vedral got hurt, and I think out of all the three of them, Cruickshank is the worst we know at this point. He's out for the season. But I mean, everything just went wrong, and as much as it sucks for the team on so many levels to have Cruickshank hurt, I think the play where he got hurt, the kickoff where he got hurt and then fumbled the ball, I think that was a turning point for the Scarlet Knights, and that's when everything just went super downhill.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it really just was after that, you know, I'm not sure it took the spirit out of the team, but, you know, it just became a calamity after that. Wisconsin couldn't stop scoring. They put up 45 points in the span of basically two quarters. They
didn't score. 45 exactly.
They didn't score.
52-0.
It wasn't 52-0, but it was about the closest we could get to 52-0. Yeah, you know, Noah Vedral, I mean, not entirely his fault. His offensive line definitely didn't help him out, but he looked pretty terrible. It was just a calamity of errors. Well, I mean, there was no other way to describe it.
If you want to talk about injuries, that O-line is so banged up. I mean,
absolutely.
No one on that O-line for the most part, was projected to start at the beginning of the year.
Reggie Sutton was one of their most consistent O-linemen, and he's out. You know, Raekwon O'Neal has been on and off the field. So many backups. There are freshmen on the offensive line, which, you know, in the Big Ten, you know, the offensive line definitely needs to be experienced. They need to have game experience like that. And, you know, just throwing freshmen in is not much they can do with all the injuries, but throwing freshmen in is not always the answer. So it's tough. And, you know, I think we've been back and forth on whether Rutgers is going to make a bowl game, get to 6-6. They have to win two of their next three to do that now. And, you know, there's definitely a path, but if they play like they did on Saturday, there's no path.
No, I mean, your quarterback can't throw for 81 yards and you expect to be competitive in the Big Ten.
Unless you're Wisconsin and you usually run the ball 65 times. But, yeah, just overall a pretty poor performance. And, you know, I think a lot of the buildup going into the week was, you know, Coach Chiano asking for the fans. He was saying, we need the fans, we need a home field advantage. And, you know, that's all good and fine. Like, there's no problem. Like, you should ask your fans to come to the game. You should want them to be a part of the game. But at the same time, you know, can you blame them if they're not going to come or they're going to leave early when it's something
there was
like
no
that?
No one in there.
No, yeah, kickoff, there was nobody in there. I mean, at the half,
nope,
I think,
even at the beginning, completely less than usual.
Yeah, it was pretty empty, I got to say. I got there, I think, maybe 4 or 5 minutes into the first quarter, and the student section, which is usually, you know, packed at the beginning of the game, they weren't there. It was pretty empty. I know I saw Gideon there.
I saw Gideon there as well.
Yeah. I could literally pick out people. That's how empty it was. Like, I could literally see individual people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you're able to find a seat right behind me, and it wasn't like you were taking anybody's seat. And, we were pretty low down to the field. We were 10 rows up, maybe, and there's nobody behind us.
I didn't know you owned an Adam Korsak jersey. That's pretty cool.
I saw that. I was like,
that's pretty cool.
That may be my most prized possession. But I mean, if you look at the jersey, it's a dark red. It's also a Nike jersey, so I feel like it's the definition of bootleg, but it's still fun. Still, it's one thing I look forward to on Saturdays now. But I mean, is all hope lost? Because I'm still holding out hope.
I don't think so. I think the biggest thing we can look forward to is the fact that Indiana is, I don't know what happened to them in the offseason, and you know, they've also had to deal with injuries of their own, but they are a completely different team than we saw last year. I think they have like 2 wins this year. I don't know if they have.
Yeah,
a big
2-7.
Or 2-7.
And they're still predicted to, like the matchup, but they're favored 66% to 33%.
I mean, it's hard to favor a team that just lost
52-3. Terrible.
But you know, we have that game, Penn State in Penn State. We can see how that goes when it happens, but I'm not looking forward to it. But Maryland, you know, Maryland's a team we beat last year. We played pretty competitively. You know, I think 2 wins is still pretty realistic. You know, it's definitely going to be difficult. There's no easy games in the Big Ten, no matter who you're playing. We've seen that before. You know, Northwestern was thought to be a winnable game, and it wasn't the way they came out. But this is the closest they've been to making a bowl since 2014. So, you know, at the same time that we are kind of glooming over this huge loss, like, this is a rebuild. It'll take time. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Last time Greg Schiano took over Rutgers, it was the same thing. You know, they were losing to teams like New Hampshire in, like, 2001. And, you know, we're not losing to teams like that anymore, but it's still an uphill battle. And, you know, he needs time. You know, Chris Ash definitely didn't need more time. Greg Schiano definitely does need more time.
Oh, yeah, Schiano does. The recruits that he has coming in are just super committed to the squad, and it's going to be a whole different team within 2 to 3 years.
I mean, 2022, we literally have the top player in New Jersey, the top player in New York, and the top player in Kentucky. So
Jacob Allen, what a kid. Used to go to high school with him. He's a cool dude.
He's from my hometown.
Yeah, Spotswood.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Someone who heard of Spotswood.
Yep. Someone who actually has heard of Spotswood, yes.
Yeah.
Very, very far and very few and far between
exactly.
At this school. Even though it's like 20 minutes away, but I digress.
Well, Dylan, you talked about the top player from Kentucky, and you know that's quarterback, future phenom, hopefully redshirting this year, but Gavin Wimsatin. One of the chants, and you know, we talked about the student section wasn't so filled, but you could audibly hear people chanting, "We want Gavin."
Oh, yeah.
I don't agree with that one bit.
I wasn't in the student section either, and people were like, "Get this kid in there."
As fun as it is, and like as great as it was to see him against Illinois, and I think that play was probably Rutgers' best play of the whole entire season. I mean, that game won us the game.
I most remember from the entire season, for sure. It's the one that sticks out in my mind.
But I mean, I don't know what you guys feel, but I do not want Gavin Wimsatt in right now. I don't want an 18-year-old quarterback. He's like 18 in a month. He's played a single snap during a game, and that's not his fault at all. I mean, he's 18. He just got here. He should be in high school. I don't want him going behind a battered O-line any Big Ten D-line is going to get through, and they're going to hit Noah Vedral, who's an experienced college quarterback. He still gets banged up. Why would we ever throw an 18-year-old in there? And, you know, I don't think that was ever in the game plan to throw in Gavin Wimsatt yesterday, especially if, you know, the way things were going, but he'll get his time eventually. He'll have a healthy O-line with top recruits protecting him. But, I mean, I don't think we want Gavin just yet.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not yesterday. But in the same light, like, if it's 45-3 and Noah Vedral was injured last week and had to be taken out of the game multiple times, you know, what are you doing leaving him in the game? Like, it's 45-3, you know. I don't like to be doom and gloom all the time, but I think at that point the game is over. You know, I think it's time that you bring in someone like Cole Steiner or Evan Simon, and then Noah ended up getting hurt again. You know, it's a poor play, like, compounded with the effect that it's later in the season. Everyone is getting banged up, you know. Special teams players are going into class with sprained ankles, things like that. It's tough. It's tough out here. And, you know, I'm not disagreeing with that. It's getting colder, you know. It's harder to stay healthy. But that, with the play, you know, is just... That was the worst performance of the season. There's no doubt about it. Like, Northwestern, you know, it seemed like they were just falling all over themselves and they couldn't do anything right, but it was nothing like this. You know, they were just outmatched completely. They got 275 yards thrown on by a team that is quarterbacked by Graham Mertz, which if Graham Mertz is throwing for 275 yards on you, that's a problem. That is an absolute problem. So, just a lot of things compounded together. It was a tough weekend for Rutgers. Big day for Rutgers. We usually have the hotkey, but it was the opposite. It was a small day for Rutgers.
Yeah, I'm looking at that hotkey right now, and my hand's not on the mouse. No, I mean, going back a little bit, Dylan, like, I completely agree with you. There was a point in the game where you could count Rutgers out. Even the most, you know, hopeful Rutgers fan was probably heading for their car at that point. And I'm totally with you on that. That's the time to put in your backup quarterback. You're down 5-0 in an NHL game. You put in your backup goalie. That's why you got to give them their time somehow. And that's a perfect opportunity for Evan Simon, Cole Snyder to come in, get their reps, play in a Big Ten game. It's not a guy, you know, not a time for Gavin. But, I mean, yeah, that was just – yesterday was, like you said, Dylan, I mean, you can't let Graham Mertz do that. And when you're able – you know, putting aside who Graham Mertz is, when you pick off another team's quarterback in a Big Ten game, do something with the ball. Don't throw in a pick six literally two plays later. I mean, that was like, when we got the interception, that was, you know, that could have changed the whole tide of the game. If Rutgers went up early in that game by a touchdown, that would have been huge. If Rutgers, you know, punched the ball up the middle a couple of plays, tried to move the chains in. Obviously, it's easy to look back on things now the day after, but, I mean, throwing a pick six two plays after you get an interception against another Big Ten team is pretty much, I bet that's the opposite of what Sean Gleason had dialed up in his playbook.
Oh, yeah. It was rough watching that. I meant to say the whole game just was with some people.
You're a real fan for that. You should be given like a medal or a jersey. Mike
I'm surprised. My dad texted me. He was like, "You're still here?" I was like, "Yep." I just knew some people who knew someone on the dance team. They were like, "Oh, we'll just stay the whole time."
That's fair.
I was like, you know, I have nothing else to do. I would just sit in my dorm.
Yeah.
And maybe sleep. I was like, I'll just stay at the game and, you know, hang out. But it was rough. It was so quiet in that stadium. You did not hear a peep out of any Rutgers fans.
I was with my dad, and, you know, he was the one who was actually like, "All right, let's go." It was halftime. It was 38-3. He was like, "All right, do you want to leave?" And I'm like, "Not really. I should probably stay and watch the team." He's like, let's just go. Let's go get food or something. I was like, "All right." But
yeah, I mean, I'm usually one of those people that I never like to leave sports games early.
Yeah, you know,
I'm never one of those people that's beat the traffic. Like, if I paid all that money to go to a sports game and I invested the time.
Absolutely.
Like,
if I paid money for it, yeah.
Yeah,
but even for Rutgers, like, I'm still going to Busch on a Saturday. Like, it's not like it's the easiest thing. And, like,
that's true.
If I'm investing the time, especially for a 12 o'clock game, for a noon game, and, you know, when you wake up that early, if I'm investing the time in that and I'm going to sit there, and I, you know, I absolutely love it. But if I'm going to put the time in there, usually I would, you know, if Rutgers was down 7 at, you know, going into the fourth quarter, I'd be in my seat. If Rutgers was down probably by 2 touchdowns, I'd be in my seat. But what happened yesterday, I was so happy when halftime came around. Because, like, okay, you know what? I did my time. I'm going to head out.
I did my time. Paid my dues.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I need to go. It was just like, there was just nothing happening.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
Even Adam Korsak looked off, and that's how you know things aren't going well.
That's when you know for sure that it wasn't going well. Of course, Korsak's looking off.
No, absolutely. You know, I found myself on Sunday, you know, really looking at the punting a lot more. I don't know if it was because of the result or just because of the accumulation, but I as a Rutgers fan, I've become more appreciative of, you know, good punting in football. You know, it's an important factor. But yeah, like you said,
very sophisticated of you.
Of course, you know, I'm a modern day football fan. You know, I gotta be multifaceted. Special teams matters too. But yeah, you know, like you said, just an overall tough time. Rutgers have a very good bounce back chance though this week against Indiana. You know, I think after Northwestern, people were like, "Well, I don't know what Illinois is gonna be like." And then we went into Champaign, we walked out with a W. It was a really good result. This week we have Indiana and Bloomington. You know, we seem to play a little bit better on the road than we do at home, so maybe we can walk into Bloomington, get a W, and walk out. I definitely don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
No, not crazy.
You know, Rutgers seems like a team with a lot of bounce-back ability. You know, a guy like Graciano, a motivator, will do that to you, but we'll definitely have to see. It is it's going to be interesting this week. This is one of the biggest games of the season for sure. If they lose this game, their chances of making a bowl go basically to none.
Because
I don't see them beating Penn State at Penn State.
Oh, no, Penn State would erupt. They would just go nuts.
That'd be awesome. Watching that from afar, just seeing seeing what happens if Rutgers beats Penn State on the road.
But would, I mean, be incredible.
It would be incredible.
Any bad thing we said about football this year just goes completely out the window. The Northwestern loss doesn't even count at that point.
All we had to do was beat Penn State.
But I mean, yeah, Dylan, absolutely. Like, next week against Indiana is do or die if you want to make a bowl game. It would be nice, regardless of the result next week, it would be nice to round out your regular season senior day with the win against Maryland. But if you want to be competitive, you want to have a postseason, you need to beat Indiana on the road next week. And, you know, we all remember what happened last time Rutgers went to Indiana. We threw for a single yard.
Oh.
So I feel like anything above that, we're fine. You know, even 81 yards. But, I mean, it's like, I liked, we know Pacheco ran for 55 yards last week, or Saturday. But I liked when Kyle Manungai came out there. I liked the way that they worked him in. I liked the rotations between the running backs. And, in these last couple of games, I kind of want to see more Kyle Manungai. He's the younger man. He's the guy of the future. Now, I'm interested to see how they work him in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I went to the press conference last week, and I was able to ask Shiano about Kyle Manungai. And, he's just a guy who, I think everyone, has a lot of respect for Isaiah Pacheco. And, he's done, a good job being the running back. But Kyle is just so much more of a north-south guy. He is better at making something out of nothing, whereas it seems Isaiah kind of needs to, have the perfect opening to be able to make an impact. Kyle is just able to get up the field, and it doesn't matter if the hole is not really there. He's a guy who's going to get 2-3 yards every carry, as opposed to Isaiah, who sometimes kind of goes side to side and gets stopped in the backfield or something like that. So I think that there's a good chance, especially next year, that Kyle takes the lion's share of carries and becomes the workhorse back for Rutgers. He has a lot of potential, and he's showing it really early. And we have a lot of, there's not a lot of bright spots to talk about today after the performance, but Kyle Manungai is definitely one of them. He's been showing out, and I'm really excited to see him. He's a New Jersey guy. It's a Don Bosco product, and he's continuing to make Jersey proud. He's doing a really good job. He leads the team in rushing touchdowns, I want to say. Believe so.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah, he's the guy that they've been putting on the goal line because, for that reason, he's the guy who's going to punch it up the middle. I mean, Pacheco, he'll rip off a 20-yard run during a game. He'll rip off even two, but that's because he got lucky, or he found the perfect – he was able to round the corner perfectly and, took the ball upfield. And that's just not something that Kyle Manungai does. I mean, Kyle Manungai puts his head down, goes right up, and when it comes to rushing touchdowns for the team, Kyle Manungai has 4, Pacheco has 3, Aaron Young has 2, Johnny Football has 2, and Vedral has that 1 against Indiana – against Illinois, excuse me. So, we know the running game is going to be what's more focused on now, especially with who knows who the starting quarterback's going to be. Who knows who the starting quarterback's going to be. So, the running game is going to be what is more focused on, especially with the injury to Cruikshank. But we'll see. I mean, it would be interesting to see if they work in Aaron Young. I feel like we've seen much more Manungai than Aaron Young recently.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that too. But I definitely think Manungai should be worked in there a little more. He really is impressing. We've had a lot of freshmen that have kind of been forced to step up this year due to injury, and he's kind of just earned his spot, which is a great job for him and a great find by Rutgers. I remember in the spring game it was him and Jameer Wright Collins. They both had really, really impressive. Yeah. They both for had sure. really impressive games. The wonder was. Was one of them going to crack their way into, getting carries for the actual team, in the fall? And Manungai has done that very well. And, looking forward to next year, I think the running back spot is one of the more shining lights that Rutgers has, going into the future. Manungai, Jameer Wright, Collins, they really do have a bright spot there. Hopefully they can build their offense around guys like that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And especially with a little bit older of a receiving core. You have Bo Melton, who's on his way out. And as good as a receiver as he is, maybe potential NFL talent, he's on his way out. Aaron Cruikshank's on his way in. You have guys coming up. You have Josh Youngblood. We saw him plenty on special teams yesterday. And you have guys like that coming up. But if you're able to cement a workhorse running back who you could give the ball to, first down, second down, third down, and if Rutgers tries to get fancy on fourth down too, I mean, that's a key to success. Especially if we're waiting a little bit for Gavin to fully adjust to being a Big Ten quarterback and fully adjusting to being a college-level quarterback, if we play guys like Cole Snyder, Evan Simon, you know, in the interim between Noah Vedral and Gavin Wimsatt, letting guys like Manungai run the ball and giving them more reps is going to be huge for this team. You know, I'm, if Rutgers takes 10 minutes to get the ball upfield, but they do it without any turnovers,
I'm pretty okay
I'm
with
that.
Yeah. Nine-minute drive, definitely wouldn't complain. I mean, what was the Michigan's first drive against Rutgers? It was like 8 minutes, and they scored a touchdown. If that's something that Rutgers can adopt, and I think they definitely need, you know, I think they need a little bit more offensive line experience to be able to do that, maybe a healthier offensive line, you know. It's not all their fault. They've dealt with so many injuries this year. It feels like every game someone is dropping, or, you know, someone is, you know, coming off the field. But if Rutgers can, you know, be a team that, like, puts drives together, they're going to win more football games. That's no doubt. You know, if you put a drive together and you take time off the clock and then you come away with points, it just makes your chances of winning so much higher.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just take it slow. It's not, you know, rest up the defense. We know how the Rutgers defense is the better unit when it comes to the two. So if you're going to run the ball every down, I mean, if it works, it works. But, yeah, I mean, it's none of that is really possible until you have a healthy O-line. And this year, if we had Reggie Sutton, if we had Raekwon O'Neal, you know, Reggie Sutton played in the first three games. He didn't play in the Big Ten games. But if he's able, if those two guys are able and the caliber of those guys are matched on that O-line, then regardless of who your running back is, you just give them better opportunities to succeed. You give your quarterback more time to throw. And we know a guy like Noah Vedral who's able to move around in the pocket. He's a hard worker, but just sometimes, you know, he's forced into bad passes sometimes. And I think part of that is he doesn't throw the ball out of bounds. He doesn't, you know, if Noah Vedral's throwing the ball, he's going to throw it downfield. He's going to keep it in bounds, which sometimes works out. I mean, we saw that crazy play, that amazing catch right on the sideline with, you know, by Johnny Langan against Illinois. But sometimes, like we saw yesterday, it turns into a pick six. So I think a lot of success for Rutgers will start, obviously it will start with being healthy, but, you know, starting with a healthy O-line just is going to give success to everybody, especially if Rutgers is going to be, you know, relying way more on younger running backs and younger quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. Just the young talent, I think, will be fine. That's what Shiano came in for. We have a lot more people just come in ready to play, and we have a lot to look forward to. Whether it looked bad now, you know, just got to take it slowly.
Yeah, I mean, that's also too. I think keep your expectations in check. It's not like Rutgers is going undefeated in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's goal going into the season was to make a bowl game now, you know, to go 3-3. And I think that's, you know, that's an easy benchmark to notice when you're playing that extra game, you're playing that bowl game. That's a benchmark that is very clear. It's more than just, you know, you could say, I want Rutgers to go in and beat, you know, Team A or beat Team B. But at the end of the day, that's only just one win. I think a lot of people are focused on that bowl game just because of its prominence and the significance of being in a bowl game. But at the end of the day, I mean, maybe that was a little bit too much to expect, and it's not to say that Rutgers won't be in a bowl game soon. I mean, Rutgers will be, with the way that Shiano's recording, Rutgers should be in plenty of bowl games in the next couple of years. But, you know, I think maybe a bowl game was pushing it just a little bit. I was one of those people saying that was my expectation. And I think at this point it still is. But we'll see what happens. Still plenty of time. Still two somewhat winnable games left on that schedule.
Yeah, definitely. And with that, I think we're going to go to break.
Welcome back to the WRSU crew. Myself, Gideon Fox, along with Christian Vasquez, Dylan McCoy. We are now going to bring in Rutgers head field hockey coach Meredith Civico. Hi, coach. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
We're great. Thank you for coming onto crew.
Of course.
So you guys, you won the Big Ten at Field Hockey Championships yesterday at home in front of a sold-out Bauer Field. And then afterwards, you guys found out you were the number one seed in the NCAA tournament. How does that feel? You know, there's been almost a full day since then. How do you guys feel? How does the team feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing, incredible. You know, I knew that coming into this season, this team was really special, and really had that belief from early on that we could do something special together. And it's just, I think to win this championship at home in front of all of our fans, and Rutgers Nation was amazing this weekend. I mean, it was just, it was incredible. So proud of the team and so proud to be the head field hockey coach at Rutgers. Our crew put on an amazing event, so it was, it just feels like a dream.
Coach, Dylan McCoy here. You know, looking back at the season, you know, obviously the season still goes. You had the NCAA tournament, but, you know, looking back at the season, you had a roster that returned a lot of players from last year, and, you know, you've really seen a step up in play. Is there one or two players that you've really seen, you know, their game step up throughout the season, or do you think it's been more of just the whole team, you know, really stepping up their game and improving this season?
You know, I think this, it's been an absolute team effort, I think, the entire season. And, you know, from our, we've got a group of five, fifth year, and Katie Larmore has actually taken her sixth year, seniors who have just been incredible. We have an amazing group of young players, who've impacted the team. Our bench players, the players coming in, we've got incredible depth. You know, it's just an absolute team effort. I think, you know, Gianna Glass has been incredible for us in goal. I think she really stood out this weekend in the tournament, as did Katie Larmore, Carrie Burns. You know, those are our three captains, and I think they just did a tremendous job just kind of leading the charge throughout this weekend.
Hi, Christian Vasquez here, Coach. Just wanted to know how, you know, it seems like a very tight-knit squad. Obviously, first seed is great to see and great for Rutgers as a whole, just in athletics. How's that team camaraderie off the field work with on the field? And could you tell that from the beginning of the season as well?
Yes, and I think that was one of the things, you know, that I as an athlete, you know, being at the University of Maryland and competing for championships year in and year out, you know, when you have a special team, you know, when you have what it takes, you know, and a big part of what it takes to be champions and what it takes to go all the way is just how the team connects off the field. How willing are they to lay it all on the line for each other? You know, how tight-knit are they as a group? And I think the thing about Rutgers field hockey and Rutgers athletics, just culturally, it's family. That's the mentality, and we will do anything for one another. And I could tell early on in the season that we had that, you know, and then adding in the experience, I think the field hockey IQ with a lot of our players, the talent, some of the newcomers, you know, fitting right in. You could tell early that we had all the ingredients, and we built a schedule that if we could put it all together, we could really achieve something. So it was a process. You know, we really took it one game at a time, one week at a time, and we're not done yet. But, yeah, it's a really tight-knit team. They're best friends. They're always together. And I think that really shows in how we play together on the field.
Coach, this is Gideon again. A couple weeks ago in late October, you guys lost to Michigan 3-0. So what changed between that game and yesterday? You know, how did you guys prepare knowing, you know, you already seen that Michigan squad? So how'd you guys change your tactic going into yesterday's game?
Yeah, I think one thing about our team that I love so much is that every challenge that we've faced along the way through the season, we've just had this tremendous amount of growth just shortly after. You know, I think we have three losses, and I think each time, you know, we kind of had a challenge, we really responded so well. I think the team really looked at that game out at Michigan, and it wasn't a good performance by us. You know, I think it was not our best hockey. We were playing a little bit back foot, a little bit, you know, kind of more defensive. And I think we just wanted to attack it and attack the game and press and play really high pressure and possess the ball really well. One of our strengths is obviously our team defense. You know, we're just so gritty. We've got the best goalkeeper in the country. And that's something we're great at, but I think just that pressure up front. And we really just, the first, you know, quarter, we were just going for it. you know, not holding anything back. So I think that was kind of that mentality going into this game. We knew we had to shift that from the first time we played them.
Coach, you know, you obviously had a very historic season. You know, in addition to the Big Ten championship, you broke the program record with 18 wins this year. You earned the second appearance of your time at Rutgers, two of four NCAA tournament appearances they've had. What does it mean to you that, especially after this season, you know, when people mention Rutgers field hockey for years to come, they're going to mention your name and this team's name this year? What does that mean to you to really be etched in the history books at Rutgers field hockey?
I mean, it's incredible, and you know, I'm so grateful for the players who decided to come to Rutgers 10 years ago. You know, pretty much most of them were at the game this weekend and at the championship game. And, you know, I was talking to them after the game and they were saying, remember when? And I just, you know, it's been such a process. I always knew Rutgers field hockey could be successful, could be a national contender. You know, it's been a process. We've put, you know, I've put my family, our coaching staff has put everything into this. And to be in this position this year is just incredible and so special. And I couldn't be more proud to be the head coach at Rutgers. It's a special place and we are going to do big things here.
Absolutely. You guys have already started to do some big things. And Coach, you know, the last couple of years, you guys have not had the greatest success in the Big Ten tournament. So was that something that was on the back of the team's minds this year? You know, there's a lot of seniors on the team that had played in the Big Ten tournament, but didn't really have so much success. So was there almost, you know, some sort of revenge that was on the line coming into this Big Ten tournament?
I think from last season, definitely from last season, when we played in the spring, I think we were really just disappointed. You know, I think we ended up playing Northwestern in that first round game. We played really well, but just couldn't convert. And I think the team was devastated. Every single person, I remember just everybody just looking in each other's eyes after that game and saying, like, next season, this is going to be different, you know. And everybody, we kind of knew at that point that five of the six players were coming back. And I think, but I think definitely last season, the way that ended for us, we were not satisfied at all. And I think that was a big driving force in kind of how we approached the tournament this year. And I think it was amazing too. Like we've got this team, they're incredible. We've got this, you know, group of veteran players. They want to do something special. It's home at Rutgers. You know, our facility staff did an amazing job creating an incredible environment. I think we had record-breaking crowds. It was just, honestly, like, felt like a Cinderella story a little bit. You know, everything was falling into place, and we knew we had to go out there and play as hard as we possibly could. But, it was amazing.
Obviously, now you're going into the NCAA tournament with, you know, a lot of expectations, the number one seed in the nation. Is there any expectations you're setting on yourself and the team, or is it more just, you know, we go into the tournament, we try to play our best field hockey, and we see where the cards fall?
Yeah, I think we, you know, there's always, you know, I think that when you're looking at the ranking and the seeding, you know, I think when you first look at it, you're like, all right, we're number one. You know, we haven't been here yet. How are we going to manage this? But I think with this team, it's just been a constant focus on us. You know, we're all we need to focus on. The only things we need, you know, are we always say, like, no one takes care of RUFH, we take care of ourselves. Everything we need is within our group and within our team for us to be successful. So it's been a real focus on ourselves, focus on the process, one game at a time. We always say, too, the only ranking that matters is the one that, you know, at the end of the season, and that's, then we'll talk about it. So we obviously positioned ourselves well with this seed, but it's not something we're focused on.
Okay, Coach, final question. You know, we know how senior heavy this team is, and with that extra COVID year, there was just a lot of players who were in or very near the, you know, their last couple years of eligibility. But this year, Lucy Bannatyne, a freshman, had 7 goals, and Bridie Malinow had 6 goals. So could you speak a little bit about what it's like to get impact from some of the younger players?
Oh, my gosh. I think it's just those young players have been playing so well, and I think getting better and better as we've gone. You know, Lucy coming in as a freshman, Bridie, you know, in her sophomore season, Iris Langens, who's a freshman coming in, and oh my gosh, Gijamina Casarano is brilliant. Maggie Lamb, Amanda Beck, and Carly Snarsky, like all these young players coming in and just having a tremendous impact right away, I think is so exciting, you know, and for these young players to also be, this is their very first season at Rutgers, and they're winning a championship, and they're a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I think that experience for them is incredible. And I think it's, you know, when these players, you know, we have graduate and, you know, we have a group of new players coming in, I think this experience is really going to help us, you know, build and compete long term, which has always been the goal for Rutgers field hockey, is let's create a winning culture, a program that's sustainable, you know, for years to come. And the players just come in and they know the deal, you know, and it's just the way we are, you know, RUF8. So I think that's just really special for them.
Coach, thank you again for coming on. Congratulations on the win yesterday and good luck in the NCAA tournament.
Thank you guys so much.
Locks of the night. Not of the week. We're all on a couple times a week. Locks of the night here on the Monday edition of The Crew. This is where we give you our sound financial advice. You know, I wish I would have been on Friday. I could have told you all to bet on the Giants, you know, because obviously I knew they were going to win this weekend. You know, I think they're a lock to win every weekend, of course. But, yeah, so this is the segment where, you know, we try to help you out, give you guys some locks. Is anyone ready with a lock? If not, I can go first. I have one in mind.
Yeah, I'm still poking around for something. Not too many NHL games on tonight, so I'm going to have to go with football.
Yeah, I was also thinking about going with football, but I will digress. I'm going to go to the world of basketball.
Oh.
Tonight, 8:10, we've got the Nets and the Bulls. You know, both teams have looked pretty good, but I have a lot of faith in my Nets. They're -1 or -116 on the money line. So basically a pick 'em, pretty much even money. But I definitely like the Nets. You know, I think Harden and Durant are meshing well. You know, the kind of assumption that Kyrie's not going to be there has kind of, you know, permeated the team. And I think that they're understanding how to play without him. So for that reason, I like the Nets. -1. If you're looking for a player prop, Kevin Durant over 25 points probably be a good one. I don't know what his actual over-under is. I can check that. It's probably less than, or it's probably more than 25. It's probably somewhere around 27, 28 and a half. Let me check that real quick. But I really do think that he's a good player. He's +120 to be the top point scorer. His over-under is 28 and a half. I would take his over, honestly. I think him scoring 29 is, you know, if they're going to win, I think that's definitely also going to happen. So, like the Nets money line tonight and KD over 28 and a half. So, who wants to follow that one up?
Who? I think I got mine.
Okay.
Seems every Monday now I do MMA.
I got to say, I was going to say the Trevor Whitman parlay last week.
All of them worked.
A hit. Yep. It was a
all
hit.
All of them worked.
So, definitely a good one. Definitely gonna might have to put some money on your pick this week. No pressure, of course. But
MMA this week we have Bellator and UFC Fight Night. Bellator I think is the easiest lock. Chris Cyborg coming in. She's let me see her record 24-2 against Sinead Kavanaugh, who's 7-4. It's not even close. Cyborg rolls through her opponents other than Amanda Nunes, but we're not going to talk about that. She's back in Bellator. She's their champion. I believe it's featherweight over there. But nonetheless, she's easy lock. And then on Saturday, UFC Fight Night at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas, Max Holloway returns against the returning Yair Rodriguez. That should be one heck of a fight. That's going to be a striking classic. I think Holloway's going to come out on top. He's just looking. Yeah, I watched him today on Ariel Helwani's MMA Hour, and he says even if he wins, he said he's not necessarily looking to go for the title. He says he might be looking to make some big money matches.
I heard he might fight a certain Irishman next year.
He does have a win over the current lightweight champion. He says he would fight anyone, and he is putting his name as a replacement in the fight, I believe, for UFC 269 and Poirier and Oliveira. So he's already placed. Holloway's one of those guys in MMA that you just love to see will fight anyone on any day. Bless Max Holloway. And he's just going to get another win. He'll have a striking classic, one of the best boxers in MMA. And look for him to put up some high striking numbers against Calvin Kattar. What was it, like 500 combined strikes? Look for it to be 350-400 in this with a win from Holloway again.
Love that. Love the MMA picks from you, Christian. Look forward to them every Monday, I got to say.
So for mine, we have to go to Monday Night Football. The Bears are going to Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be a big day for Najee Harris. I think the Steelers are going to get out to an early lead and then just run the ball. So there's some value in this, but Najee Harris to have 85-plus rushing yards in Pittsburgh to win, you get that at plus 104, pretty much get an exact return on what you put in. I can't put my money on anything more than plus 200 right now. So I'm going to need some quick locks, and I'm going to go with Najee Harris. I don't have him in fantasy, so this is the one.
I do. So you're helping me out right there.
Do you need him to do tonight?
I need him to literally put up like 4 points. I should be fine.
He could put up four.
But Tyler Higbee almost ended the week for me last night, but his touchdown got taken away in Sunday Night Football. So,
oh, wow.
Unfortunate. I would have won already, but yeah, that's a tough scene. But I need Najee to literally like catch one pass for 30 yards and I'll win. So
I mean, if he runs the ball up for 40 yards, I'd be very happy on that one. That would work for you. That'd work for me.
It'd be great. It would be absolutely amazing.
So yeah, we'll see Najee Harris there. And I think that game, a lot of people are saying take the Bears +6.5. But I can't get behind it. I don't know.
I don't think Pittsburgh's offense is good enough to, you know, hold off that defense. And this has been a complete week of underdogs. So many underdogs have won.
God, oh, yeah.
I mean, the Jaguars were plus like 900, and they beat the Bills, which I don't know how that happened. I can't explain it. You know, I'm not a football scientist. I don't know the formula that went into that game. But
they beat them in the most Jaguars way.
They didn't score any touchdowns. They kicked 3 field goals. Yeah, that game was I got to believe if you were a Jaguars or a Bills fan, that game was kind of a miserable watch. That's a tough
Josh thought. Allen's my fantasy quarterback.
That must have been a miserable, miserable watch for you.
Oh, I still won
you.
By a lot. But
I mean, I mean, then you're good. But
Josh Allen shut down Josh Allen yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, I was watching Red Zone, and Scott Hansen was loving every second of it.
It's been a day. I'm already over those jokes. It was funny, but I feel like now every time this happens, you know, it was cool to see, though. It was funny.
I mean, every time it happens is literally going to be one time if the Jaguars ever play the Bills ever again.
Yeah, for sure.
That is true.
But you know who had a big day on Sunday that I was really happy about? It wasn't a Giant. It wasn't a Giant. Colt McCoy. doing the Bloodline proud. I think he had like 4 incompletions, threw for like 270 yards, touchdown. A lot of people were nervous about what the Arizona Cardinals were going to do. They didn't realize they had 2 starting level quarterbacks, you know, in their QB room. You know, Colt did a great job. And, you know, if Kyler can't play this Sunday, I think the Cardinals will still be fine because I think, you know, Colt can be the guy. You know, I might have worn my jersey after that game. Might have put my Colt McCoy Giants jersey on after that game. Was proud for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals are just, you know, we talked about how scary the Cardinals are with Kyler Murray. But, I mean, they were able to win by 2 scores with Colt McCoy. So I think that's going to, you know, that'll be scary down the road. And just makes that division even scarier.
Yeah, the NFC is nuts. A Super Bowl winner is coming out of the NFC for sure this year.
I feel like it's going to come out of the NFC West.
I also think it's going to come out of the NFC West. I'm assuming you think it's going to be the Rams.
After the Von Miller trade that's what sold me. You know, coming into the season.
Ooh, they looked bad last night, though.
They did look bad last night. Tennessee looks good. They didn't even
have
Derrick Henry. And
Peterson immediately ran for a touchdown already in that game. First game back.
The defense, Tennessee's defense was absolutely crazy
they
last
destroyed
night, too.
Stafford's my other fantasy quarterback.
Stafford's been, I mean, unreal. Stafford and Cooper Kupp, once I saw that happening this year, I was like, okay, maybe these Rams have what it is. They have a great defense. And then they went out and got Pro Bowler Von Miller. And then I was like, well, the best division in the NFL just got a little bit better.
And we're going to see probably maybe tomorrow who wins the Odell Beckham sweepstakes too. See,
are they even sweepstakes now?
I don't even know. He'll go to a contender. Any team could, if they have a number one receiver in the league, throw him on the other side. Who are you going to double if he's fully healthy? That's going to be rough. And that'll be tomorrow. I think waivers end by like 4.
Do you have any ideas about where you think he's going
to
go?
I think I read that he wanted to go to the Seahawks, but that's a hit or a miss, obviously, in that division, whether or not they make it or not. And he definitely wants to play for a contender. I think if he could go home to Baton Rouge, but if he wants to go to a contender, it's going to be rough. Obviously, everyone's like, oh my gosh, what if he manages to go to Tom Brady? But, you know, it seems like it's a little rough because I also read reports that if he doesn't go to the team that he wants, he's ready to cause issues, which is also does not sound good if anyone wants him either.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you never like to hear that. I don't know the teams that have enough cap space, though, that will sign him and be a contender.
Or he'll play for a minimum for a year and then maybe get his stock up, play well for the latter half of the season with a contender into the playoffs.
Yeah, luckily the Giants are only have about $1 million in salary cap. So, Dave Gettleman, you can't even do it. I know you want to. You want to be a buyer because, you know, you want to keep your job.
He's a comeback.
Yeah. Also remember, the Giants are 1.5 games out of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
So, that's true. They are literally, the Falcons are the 7th seed right now at 4-4, and the Giants are 3-6.
And the Falcons,
and they have a pretty, after Tampa Bay, they have a pretty winnable schedule at the end of the season. So
yeah, after Tampa Bay.
Let's go 10-7 and win this division, is what I'm hearing.
Ooh.
Yeah, after Tampa, Dylan, like you said, it gets easier in. The Eagles the week after Tampa, that'd be a great way to get things started again. A divisional victory at home. Just trying to right the ship, which is already being righted somewhat.
Yeah, it was weird to see a Giants game and know that the reason they won was their defense. That was a strange feeling. But Xavier McKinney had the best game he might ever have as Giant. He had 2 interceptions, he had pick 6. Derek Carr decided that he wanted to let us win the game with, taking a sack, throwing interceptions, fumbling the ball, which was awesome. Love to see that. But now we have WRSU sports director Chris Tokonis coming in. I think I know what he's going to talk about. I just saw this news as well.
Yeah, we've got breaking news. Rutgers women's basketball head coach C. Vivian Stringer will not coach at all this season.
Oh, wow.
Report from Keith Sargent of NJ Advanced Media came out about 5 minutes ago. So, that would mean associate head coach Tim Eatman is going to be running the show for the entire year. So, that just dropping on our feet a few minutes ago. So,
confirmed that too.
They did. Okay.
Reason as to why or undisclosed?
Well, she's been not with the team since April.
No, yeah.
She's very immunocompromised. I think that's a big thing. And she's
a child, too, who's also immunocompromised.
Yeah, might as well stay away.
It's unfortunate. She's a great coach. She's a Hall of Fame coach. I'll be covering the first women's game tonight. I wasn't sure if I was going to see her. I was excited, but fortunately, she made a personal decision for her health. Can't be mad at her for that.
No, of course not. But it is pretty big news in terms of
What
that locker room looks like heading into this season. And now you have Tim Eatman, someone who has been in this situation before, end of the 2018-19 season, had to step into this role as well when she had to take a break due to health issues. I feel like if you're going to have someone have to fill in, Tim Eatman's probably your best bet.
Very solid.
So, for sure. Good hands in that respect.
I definitely think that, it's not obviously the best case scenario, but see Vivian Stringer, her coaching staff has definitely, helped her out as she's kind of the last couple of years, she's had to deal with other things off the court. So, I think they have the experience and the knowledge to, guide this team to where they're going to go. I mean, we'll have to see where that is. There's a lot of turnover in the roster. Obviously, Diamond Johnson was probably the biggest name that transferred. Arel Garantes is in the WNBA now. It's going to be weird to watch Rutgers women's basketball without her.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of new faces on this team. So, you know, their ceiling is kind of up to them and how they decide to play. And, you know, hopefully they'll be back in the NCAA tournament, but we'll have to see. And there's a lot of questions with this women's basketball team that I think are going to be answered, you know, very quickly as we watch them play, you know, and especially when they get into their Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there are a lot of new faces on this team, but there are also a lot of new faces last year. I mean, you know, granted, last year the team kept their core of players like Takiya Mack, Mael Giles, Morel Garantis, and, you know, Dylan, like you said, they got Diamond Johnson and then she transferred. But the coaching staff, and Tim Eamon included, as well as all of his assistants, have worked with C. Vivian Stringer for years upon years and have been in tough situations before. You know, there are a lot of questions, Dylan, like you said. We will get to answer those, but, you know, we just hope for the best for C. Vivian Stringer and her family.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what matters the most, you know. Yeah. Obviously, as Rutgers fans, you know, she's been a mainstay in our lives watching women's basketball for literally our entire lives. But, you know, obviously, health and safety comes first, you know. Wish her the best. Hopefully, you know, maybe in a few months we'll see if she's able to come back, but I think Tim Eatman, you know, has the experience, has the understanding, and I think he has the mindset to coach this team to where they need to go. So, ultimately, it's just something that's going to play out, and we'll see, and it'll be a developing story as the season goes on.
But for sure.
We will have to, you know, track back and see where the team is, you know, maybe in the middle of the season. But with that, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, get a legal ID in there, do all that good stuff. When we come back, we will have the second hour of The Crew here on WRSU-FM, New Brunswick.